welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the British sitcom of free speech, because you know, you never know what kind of weird things people are going to say. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the badly needed fundage. Okay, this is our it's kind of confusing. Andy already started the show, but his show is longer than my show, so it gets chopped off of my show, the beginning and the ending. And so we're doing this thing, and it's called Boomer Califragilisti something or other dosis. And I never learned how to pronounce it, because I think it's the longest word in the English language. But so it's the three of us together. We do this twice a month, but the first one in the month is the Dankoff Report, kind of the origin of the Dankoff Report in its modern. What is even the word? Gosh, I can't even think of words today. It's modern configuration. And by the way, I heard the Dankoff Report for Friday. This is excellent. It's a perfect vehicle for Mark Dankoff, who's with us today. Before we get into other stuff, is there any Dankoff Report type of news or announcements that you have for us?
Well, I'm actually still working on a show description for this show as far as my end of things, handing Andy a page full of links, and still working on it. There are several items on the Unce Review that are well worth people's time, including the latest stuff that's there in regard to Russia and Ukraine. I was looking at Michael Walsh's site today, Europe Renaissance. There's an excellent story there about General Suravikin. And the fact that General Suravikin's father, of course, who used to give American aviation a lot of fits, now has a son, meaning General Suravikin himself, who is using British tactics, according to Michael's article, in order to give the Ukrainians fits. So that's an excellent story that I think people ought to look at. I've ongoingly been monitoring the Mercurius and Christoforou broadcasts over at the Duran in regard to the latest things going on in this whole struggle in Donbass. With the latest on the battlefronts. So you've got a situation there where people can get caught up there by taking a look at those shows. And then basically on the cultural front, I have all kinds of things to put in the show description, none of which are very, very good at all. Hold on here. Bravo. Anyway, my German Shepherd, when I mention culture, he kind of gets set off here. In regard to all the bad stuff that's going on when it comes to culture, and this is just the latest stuff that I've been following. One of the things that I'm following up on that I'll have for the next Dankoff Report on RBN, hopefully, is a follow-up on this codification of gay marriage in both houses of the United States Congress. And what I want to do there is not simply to give people a roll call vote. We already have all kinds of sources we can turn to say, aha, this number of people voted for this. But the other thing that comes into play is that I want to get into the actual text of the bill, because I'm hearing various things from various people as to what allegedly is in the bill. In this particular case, I'm going to take a look specifically at whether or not there's any language in the bill that conceivably could begin to threaten the tax-exempt status of 501c3 organizations in the United States, churches and church schools specifically, that have very traditional biblical ideas about the whole question of gay marriage and whether or not they would lose their tax-exempt status as a result of what is now passed both houses of Congress, and Mr. Biden signs that dreadful piece of legislation today. So that's basically it in terms of a brief wrap-up from me. And, of course, during the course of the conversation that we're having on the air here, I will integrate different news stories as they come up.
Okay, well, thank you very much. So I think it would be interesting later in the show to talk about the Ukraine-Russia situation, updates on it, because I know I haven't really focused on that or any of my shows, the past several shows, and I like to keep up with it. But this is something that hadn't been that much on my radar screen, the legislation codifying the gay marriage. And, of course, the gay marriage was something that was inflicted on the United States through the court system. I think it was first the Supreme Court of Massachusetts that decided that the Puritans who founded Massachusetts and who had written the original Constitution, actually wanted dudes and dudes to marry each other and whatnot. So somehow they decided that, and a few others, I think Hawaii, the Supreme Court of Hawaii followed suit, and then before you knew it, the Supreme Court of the United States. It wasn't done through legislatures. It wasn't done through referendums by the public. It wasn't done through executive fiat. It was all done through the court system. And as was, of course, Roe versus Wade. You know, so this was a important policy initiative, and it was taken through the court system. And of course, it was in place for 50 years. And during the 50 years of Roe versus Wade, maybe I'm wrong. I never really surveyed it that closely, but I would have thought that at some point in those 50 years, there was a time where you had a you could use Democrat as a as a pronoun for pro-choice, and Republican maybe as a pronoun for pro-life, but it doesn't always work that way. I mean, there have been important and outspoken pro-life Democrats and pro-choice Republicans and whatnot. But you would have thought that at some point there was a pro-abortion majority in both the House and the Senate and a compliant president, I would think. But I've never actually done the math. Do you think that's the case, Mark? They ever had it, they just never bothered to codify it because they had become so complacent? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think there had been kind of an unwritten assumption, perhaps, that Roe versus Wade would never be overturned. They were surprised on that. And when Roe versus Wade was overturned because of the fact that the original decision was constitutionally flawed because it invented a right that was nowhere to be found in the Constitution of the United States, and that overturned jurisprudence in most of the individual states over decades. And by the way, Dr. Joseph Witherspoon, who argued the pro-life side of the Roe versus Wade case before the United States Supreme Court, was the dean of the University of Texas Law School, a Roman Catholic, and get a load of this, folks, if you didn't know this, I knew the man personally, knew his family very well. He was, and his family generally, was comprised of Hubert Humphrey Democrats. This is something that is lost today in terms of the history of that whole decision. But once Roe versus Wade was overturned, then you clearly had a situation, especially with the public remarks of Judge Thomas, that some of these other decisions needed to be reviewed. And it was clear that one of the things that Judge Thomas was talking about was the Obergefell decision in June 26, 2015, on so-called gay marriage. And in this particular case, Judge Thomas was being very, very consistent in that the lack of constitutional principle that went into the Roe versus Wade decision was, in fact, very much, I think he was hinting very much in evidence in the Obergefell decision. And so what do you have? The first thing that comes out of the Congress of the United States in both houses is a law that passes to make gay marriage the federal law of the land. Now, this is quite fascinating because in terms of the history of this, I go back to the second Pat Buchanan campaign in 1996 for the Republican nomination for the presidency. He ran a distant second that year to Bob Dole. But at that time, this whole issue of gay marriage was still enough of a hot potato, and people have forgotten this now, but it was Bill Clinton in 1996 who signed the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, which said at that time that the federal government recognized that legal marriage was between one man and one woman. That was Bill Clinton that signed that. This clearly diffused an issue for Clinton that was not an issue in the general election simply because of DOMA.
It passed with a massive majority, right? I'm sure Joe Biden, if not a co-sponsor, was a vocal supporter.
That's right. And so here we are a quarter of a century later, and we're talking about something where the Supreme Court of the United States in 2015 invented a constitutional right that did not exist any more than it existed in terms of the abortion issue in the Roe versus Wade case in 1973. And since those constitutional flaws of Roe versus Wade, at least in my view, were exposed in what I insist, however one feels on the abortion issue, was the correct decision to reverse some very bad constitutional law in the Roe v. Wade decision in 73. It's clear that the Obergefell decision in 2015 was just as flawed as the Roe versus Wade thing in 1973. And in that being the case, what is it that the United States Senate and the House jump all over? Is it something to curb billions of dollars to Zelensky? Is it something to curb the pushing of the envelope toward World War III? Are these guys pushing to repair our relationship with Putin and to try and come to grips with some diplomatic initiative with the Chinese? Is there an attempt to rebuild our physical infrastructure in this country? No, these guys, the first thing that they seize upon after the off-year elections is this gay marriage issue, which tells you about how bankrupt the political process is up on Capitol Hill. And again, when you start looking at the people on the Republican side of the aisle who voted for this thing, of all of the names that that come up, the one that I seize upon first, of course, is Mitt Romney. But he has plenty of company, and I hope to be able, between now and Friday, we'll see if I make it with everything I've got going on here with house repairs and studio security and taking care of my mother and all of this other stuff. But we'll see if I can actually get to the text of the congressional and Senate, the House version and the Senate version and the reconciled version that Biden's going to sign today. I hope that that's up. The final legislation the president's going to sign today. I hope to get to that text and to look at it in detail to see, among other things, if it does open the door for removing the tax-exempt status of traditional churches and synagogues and so forth that don't go along with this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I just have a comment to make before kicking it over to Andy. So, you know, you compared this with the abortion history, the history of abortion as a Supreme Court invented constitutional right. And I know, like, my views on abortion are not the mainstream of RBN. RBN, I would think, for the most part, with exceptions, but for the most part, takes a moralistic and often religious view of abortion, that abortion is the taking of a life, which there's no argument. It certainly is. I mean, well, there is an argument, but I mean, it's not a good argument. And I don't have any counter to that argument. It certainly is the taking of a life. And I think, even though I'm not religious myself, I think religion is important to a society, and certainly morality is important to a society. That having been said, I've never voted one way or another based on a candidate's position on abortion. It's just something that doesn't even go on my in my equation when I'm figuring out, you know, who to support or who to vote for. And this is because I've been ambivalent towards abortion as a public policy. The Supreme Court decision was constitutionally flawed big time, no doubt about it. But as a matter of public policy, the proposition of forcing irresponsible people who don't want to take care of children anyway to have babies that, frankly, likely is going to carry on their genetic propensity towards irresponsibility and other, you know, other less than desirable genetic traits, to force them to have children, and then the taxpayer, because in our welfare state society, the taxpayer is going to be paying for them. It certainly pays for their education. It may pay for their subsequent welfare motherism or incarceration. And I see a problem with that as well. So it's, you know, I do think that as a public policy matter, there are two sides to the issue. They're both important sides. So I'm just kicking that out there before throwing it over to Andy, what he thinks of what's going on in America and how that, to what extent these issues are also, you know, in evidence in the UK.
Thank you, Patrick. One thing I will say, and I only found this out in recent years, that my mum actually went out and she participated in a lot of protests against abortion. So that was brought in probably in a similar time to when it was brought in America, maybe the 60s, something like that. My mum was born in 1944. The other business with the Ukraine, that's affecting us all. Obviously affecting America with all the money being poured into it. And in the UK, we're having this big energy crisis, and they've never got any problem with giving money to the Ukraine. They always seem to find hotels to put these immigrants up in that are arriving by the boatload every day in the UK. Yet I've just got back from walking around my local town, and I've seen several homeless people sat on the street. They don't seem to get any accommodation in nice 4 or 5 star hotels. The immigrants that arrive illegally, let us not forget, on these boats that are actually brought in, many of them, they're rescued by our lifeboat service. So consequently, a lot of people who used to, you know, because every charity, the Royal National Lifeboat Institute, I believe, RNLI, they've, I understand, lost some money as a result, because people are like, well, we're not going to pay for you to rescue these people. Then they try and shame you. Oh, you want them to die and all this sort of stuff. In the same way, what they've been doing in the UK is they've been saying, when people have complained about prices going up, oh, well, you're lucky. Look at people in Ukraine. They've got no electricity. They're being bombed every day. How dare you express any dissatisfaction with the fact that your quality of life is going down when look at how these people are suffering? It's this new sort of tactic of trying to shame people for legitimately questioning why their quality of life is deteriorating under the leadership of your particular country. But they've always got an answer to come back with, and I'm very conspiratorial. I think this whole thing is linked. I discovered through listening to a caller to an actual mainstream show that another independent show played, something called Talk Radio or Talk TV in the UK, and someone called in and basically said that the energy price, I don't remember if it was electricity or gas or what have you, but it's now as low as it was in August of 2021. And of course, everything went up with the invasion of the Ukraine, what, February, March time. And that's what we're supposed to be paying 3 or 4 times what we usually pay for energy now. Yet, this guy had evidence that actually the basic cost is at that level. So we should be paying, if anything, less than we were paying earlier in the year, not 3 or 4 times what we are. And something else I'd like to throw in there, for Mark's benefit as well, because I do a little show description on my shows each day, and I was particularly touched by your one, Patrick, for your show yesterday with, on Monday's show, we're recording on Tuesday, Monday, December the 12th show with Mark Collett, who, along with Paul English, I regard as the best political speakers in the United Kingdom. This is the quote from republicbroadcastingarchives.org. Mark Collett tells Patrick that grinchy ass Zio lords won't even give Brits a lump of coal to keep them warm over Christmas. Mark, any comments?
Well, you know,
yeah,
if you look
I like that one. That's right. I tried to keep it classy.
It's not, you're not wrong anyway. I mean, that's the thing. You see, I'll give you another example. Sorry, I opened it up for Mark now. Stepping on him just very quickly. There was an MP, a Conservative MP, so the same party as the now Prime Minister, Conservative Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, and he said in Parliament,
make the world go away and get off my shoulders, say the things you used to say.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it. And how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get. And you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
And make the world go away.
Step one. Just very quickly. there was an MP, a Conservative MP, so the same party as the now Prime Minister, Conservative Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, and he said in Parliament, he gave all this evidence of problems that these so-called vaccines are causing, and then Sunak stands up and he says, well, I'm still completely committed to the vaccine. You know, all these people, Sunak is Goldman Sachs employee, that's where he started off. And what Mark Collett touched upon, or really the focus of what I've heard, I'm only halfway through your Monday show, from what I've heard, 33 minutes in, okay, nearly towards the end, but he made a very, well, the clear point that he was making was all these people in the West have got the agendas of the globalists at their heart. That's what they're doing. And if that means that their own people are going to freeze to death, they're going to starve, that's not their problem. They've followed the likes of the World Economic Forum, and that's who's doing their bidding. And they get away with it because if they get kicked out and Labour Party get in, they'll do the exact same thing. I remember hearing somebody, and this might be worth throwing open for discussion as well. I will shut up after I say this. Someone out of the US, friend of mine, Pastor Bob Jones, he used to say the only difference between the Republicans and the Democrats is and I know you don't like the term communism, Patrick, but he said, with the Republicans, you're on a jet ride to communism, but with the Democrats, you're on a rocket ride to communism. Patrick, over to you, and then over to Mark.
I think communism is bad, but syphilis is also bad, right? I think we could agree on that. And what's going on today is bad. What's going on today is bad, but just because it's bad doesn't make it communism any more than it makes it syphilis. And if you were to say, you know, like Joe Biden, he's taking America to syphilis. Well, then passing out penicillin isn't going to help anything if it's not actually syphilis. It's something different. And, you know, communism, how do you overcome communism? Well, you sell off state-owned, you privatize the economy, right? And eliminate market planning. I mean, eliminate planning. Everything becomes market. Is that going to privatize the economy and have, you know, Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg and these people to have them even, you know, less regulated or anything? Is that the solution? Is that going to end censorship or trannyism or, you know, wars for certain minorities? I don't think so. So that's why I push back against it. This isn't about communism. Communism, communism had, I know I'm a broken record. People have heard me say this. Yeah, communism used political repression. It used censorship. But that wasn't the defining feature. And there were other regimes in the 20th century and other times in history that used political repression and censorship and all sorts of, you know, bad things that weren't communist. In fact, a lot of them were explicitly anti-communist. And you think of all the people who were disappeared in Argentina, for instance, in the 70s. And, you know, a lot of stuff was going on in Greece during the reign of the colonels and South Korea during Park Chung-hee, who, you know, there's positive things to be said about Park Chung-hee. There's positive, you know, there's everybody brings something to the table, especially Park Chung-hee. Everybody does, but, you know, there was bad things that were going on too. Anyway, so I was pushed back against the communism thing, but we are going somewhere really, really bad. That's for sure. It's just not syphilis and it's not communism. What else? I forgot. I had something. One last thing. Okay. And you were mentioning Rishi Sunak doubling down. One of the things that is just so mind blowing to me is the German government, which has led Olaf Scholz as a member of the Social Democrat Party, which is an old party. It was the party of Willy Brandt and Helmut Schmidt. And then it turned kind of Clinton-esque during the late 90s and early aughts when it was led by Gerhard Schroeder, who was kind of a, you know, Clinton-style pro-corporate so-called pro-corporate leftist, if that even means anything. And that's the party. But the actual policies seem to be dominated by the Green Party, which is the second largest party in the governing stoplight coalition, stoplight red, which I guess is Social Democrat, yellow, which is the color of the Free Democrats, and then Greens. The Greens seem to be dominating. You've got the foreign minister, Annalena Ballerina Baerbock, and I guess the vice premier, his name also begins with a B, I can't remember what it is, and they're dominating it, and they're the hardest core in pushing the brutal democracy war in Ukraine, and they're saying, you know, getting to what you gentlemen are saying, they're saying, Annalena Ballerina Baerbock explicitly said that she doesn't care what the German people think. They're going to continue to support Ukraine no matter what the German people think, which was an amazing comment for somebody to make, a politician, a government, top government leader to make in a supposed our democracy, to say something like that. And yet she did. But the thing is, the Green Party, and I know,
anytime you're feeling blue,
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
If you say you want me back again, that's the time I'll come back home to you.
Which was an amazing comment for somebody to make, a politician, a government, top government leader to make in a supposed our democracy, to say something like that. And yet she did. But the thing is, the Green Party, and I know a thing or two about the Green Party. I know the American Green Party, and the Greens are an international movement. So it's probably pretty much the same thing in Germany. But the American Green Party's got their four pillars and their 10 tenets, and I can't say exactly what they are, but I'm sure that wars for a particular minority is not amongst those four pillars or 10 tenets. And yet that seems to be the most important thing is for the German Green Party is pushing this war, which is not for the German people. It's I don't even know if it's for a particular minority in Germany, but it's certainly for a particular minority that dominates the American government. What's going on? Do either of you have a perspective on this German leadership?
I do, and let me simply say this. I think we are dealing with two fundamental outrages here with the German government, and those outrages could equally apply to the British government, the rest of the EU, and the government of the United States as well. When we look at the German government, I find it absolutely incredible that Angela Merkel has now stated to the Der Spiegel magazine and to the Die Zeit newspaper that in February of 2015, when she was a key along with the French leadership, in being brokers for the so-called Minsk Agreement of February 2015, which really was the basis, I feel, of an absolutely fair and legitimate settlement between Putin's Russia and the tribal leadership, the installed leadership of Kiev, which, of course, had been installed in February of 2014 via an illegal coup d'etat, courtesy of the CIA and the British MI6 and the EU and NATO, that this February 2015 agreement, the cracks are appearing in the canvas now because Poroshenko, the leader of Ukraine, the installed leader of Ukraine after the coup d'etat, has gone public for some time over the fact that the Ukrainians, when they agreed to the Minsk deal, were doing so simply to buy time to build up their military before engaging in an overt military showdown with Putin's Russia. But now Angela Merkel, of course, who was the prime minister of Germany at the time of the Minsk Accords, Merkel is now telling Der Spiegel and Die Zeit that she, too, was engaged in this process simply to buy time for the NATO American British military buildup that we now see in this what appears to be a full-blown war now between Putin's Russia and Zelensky's government. And to me, well, to think that a prominent European leader is admitting basically that she's a liar, that she was lying through her teeth being a poseur for a brokered deal that would avert a war between Russia and Ukraine, simply underscoring that Poroshenko was not alone in his attitudes as it pertained to these Minsk Accords. Those statements, of course, have now not only caused Putin's regime to appropriately reevaluate any negotiation with anyone in the West in terms of a settlement in Ukraine short of a Russian military victory in toto. Now, when you add to that the Russian or the German political leadership, Baerbock, for example, Patrick, with these statements that you just mentioned that she had made, that the German government was going to double down on its support of Zelensky economically, regardless of how it impacts German citizens, regardless of what the German citizens themselves think of these policies as it affects Germans. These are outlandish statements. So you have a German, former German prime minister admitting that she's an absolute liar in terms of having been involved in the brokering of these Minsk Accords, which I think would have provided a tremendous opportunity for a political deal that would have settled this whole situation without any loss of life. Merkel, of course, I think is indicating quite strongly that it was the American and British political leadership that essentially wanted nothing to do with any kind of a peaceful settlement with Putin on the basis of these Minsk Accords. That must also be stated. But aside from that, whether you're looking at Baerbock statements in Germany about the, in her mind, the irrelevancy of how this is impacting German citizens economically and otherwise, this is simply a level of irresponsibility and arrogance that is just beyond my comprehension. But at the same time, look at all of these other instances in Europe, including Germany, of course, where there is now a burgeoning political opposition, grassroots, that is starting to say, hey, we want nothing more to do with this war. We are sick of what we're pouring into this thing. We're sick of the loss of life. This guy Zelensky has proven himself to be a complete horse's patoot. We want this thing settled. We want out of this thing now. I think there's increasing sentiment in the United States for a movement away from this total embrace of Zelensky and his cabal running Kiev. And yet, what are we seeing? The ongoing appropriation of billions, not millions, but billions of dollars being poured by the United States and its allies into this miserable effort, into this miserable regime in Kiev, backing, in my view, Volodymyr Zelensky, who is a totally morally flawed individual. We'll just leave it at that. And the loss of life continues to mount. The dangers of a third world war continue to draw closer. I mean, for crying out loud, you have drone strikes inside of Russia, clearly where the Ukrainians were receiving intelligence information and technical guidance from the United States to be, among other things, attacking two Russian Air Force bases well within continental Russia, including the Engels Air Force Base, which is the center of the Russian strategic nuclear force, which would be about like the if the Russians, utilizing either Canada or Mexico to do it, were floating drones over Barksdale Air Force Base in Shreveport, Louisiana, a SAC base, and the Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha, Nebraska, the head of the center of the Strategic Air Command. What would our reaction be if we had contiguous foreign powers to our borders being utilized for Russian drone strikes on our strategic nuclear force? You know where that would lead. And yet this is precisely the sort of thing that Biden and company are supporting in terms of these reckless policies in Ukraine. So this illegitimate Orange Revolution is followed by an illegal coup d'etat in February of 2014. That's followed by 8 years of loss of life among ethnic Russians in the Donbass, in the Lugansk and Donetsk regions, to the tune of about 15,000 deaths. Then, of course, that's compounded by Zelensky's statements in regard to how terrific it would be to have American and NATO military assets, including biolabs and nuclear weapons, that close to Russian borders. Then Putin finally has to intervene militarily after he was told by Macron in particular, and perhaps Merkel as well, that he ought to forget about the Minsk Accords, that even though the French and German leadership had to stake their own honor behind their brokerage of these accords, that was all now a done deal. So, you know, what is Putin supposed to do? Clearly, he takes military action. He clearly begins to see, as he's now admitted to his own people, that he was deceived by perceiving that there was goodwill in the West in regard to brokering a deal, and he made reference to the Minsk Accords. There was, after the war started, an attempt at brokering a deal in Istanbul in Turkey in late March of this year that had overtones of the Minsk Accords. You know, there in terms of the language of what was being discussed in Istanbul. But lo and behold, Boris Johnson in particular encourages Zelensky to pull out of that. And Johnson would not possibly have told Zelensky this without the full involvement of Biden and the American government. The whole thing is designed to promote war profiteering, useless death on both sides. The risk of a greater escalation in this conflict, potentially to a world war. We're now having drone strikes on American or on Russian strategic bases inside of their own country, including the Engels Air Force Base, the most serious of these violations of their airspace and their sovereignty. And now when you get to the economy, and this is where we get back to beer box statements in Germany. This is where we get back to what has happened in Britain economically. We start talking about average people in these countries who are seeing their lands overwhelmed by massive immigration caused by this war. They see their economies disintegrating before their very eyes. The Germans are watching the complete deindustrialization of their economy. Macron has finally figured out that you know the United States is charging the European governments four times the amount of money that they should normally be the case in terms of these energy prices. We're seeing the reestablishment of the Russian-Chinese alliance. and so forth and so on. You know, this whole thing, with bareback or beerbach or whatever her name is, you know, this is outlandish. And how many billions do we spend? How many thousands of people, innocent people, do we get killed? How many more immigrants, do we basically force to come into Europe because of another discretionary war? But how long is it going to be, before the kinds of idiots who are engaged in military operations well within Russian borders, including these drone strikes on the Engels Air Force Base, how long does all of this go before the whole thing just goes up in smoke? So, you know, I've been talking about this for a while. Well, I apologize, but it drives me crazy because this is outlandish policy. It's dangerous policy. It's reckless policy. It's destroying the Western countries at the same time that our Congress of the United States is pointing to its first major accomplishment after the off-year elections, and that's passing a bill on same-sex marriage.
So, and you made some points that I didn't make that I'm glad you did. It's not just that what's going on in Ukraine is some war for a little minority the way the Syrian civil war might have been, but this is something that could become a civilization-ending nuclear war, nuclear third world war. And you mentioned Angela Merkel, and you know, it's one thing to have Petro Poroshenko say, "Oh, we never planned to implement the Minsk agreement; it was just to buy time." But to have Angela Merkel say that, one of the brokers of the deal, that is, you know, not one of the parties, but one of the actual brokers, that is out. That is astounding. It is astounding. It is mind-numbing. And there are people out there, and maybe you've heard them, who say that Angela Merkel is actually Adolf Hitler's daughter. I don't know if you've heard people say that. I've heard people say that. And, of course, they present as evidence this photograph of a, you know, very robust Adolf Hitler in a crisp uniform, looking as if he had just stepped off the stage in Nuremberg, and he's in a chair, and standing next to him is a 10-year-old girl who remarkably looks the same age as Angela Merkel would have been when she was 10 years old. So that's, I mean, you know, that's hard to refute. And of course, Angela Merkel would have been 10 years old in 1963, and Nuremberg was, those rallies were in the 1930s. But, you know, with time travel technology, it's very, very possible. But what these people have missed, if you zoom in on that picture, shape of the earlobes of this little girl are completely different from Angela Merkel's earlobes. So I don't know where they're coming from with that. But anyway, all kidding aside.
Oh, I was just going to throw in there just very quickly. If Angela Merkel was indeed Adolf Hitler's daughter, she's got to be the most peculiar replication of her father since Jim Morrison was born to Admiral Morrison. Back to you. Yeah.
Well, I think it comes from like an Alex Jones kind of mindset, because Alex Jones is always blaming everything that's going on now. It's the Nazis. So anything that bad happens, it's the Nazis. And if Angela Merkel brings in a flood of migrants, non-German migrants, it's Nazi somehow. I guess because Adolf Hitler was trying to take over Europe, and Angela Merkel's trying to take over Europe through the EU, so they're the same.
I can certainly see the logic behind that.
Well, no, but that's the logic that you hear, which is it's the logic that is illogic. But anyway, Andy, what do you think regarding what Mark was talking about?
Well, I've just found something. I remembered, my memory's so bad, but I remembered Rabbi Schneerson, who's the father of the Chabad Lubavitch movement. And he said something about the Ukraine. And it came into my mind, it was, we will return this territory and build the Great Khazaria. So I've gone on to Google. So I've gone to Google, which is the most censored search engine. I've typed in Rabbi Schneerson, we will return this territory and build the Great Khazaria. And the fourth result down is Rabbi's speech, a blueprint for Ukraine war comedy population. And this is from a website that both of you may be familiar with. I'm not. But you are a lot more involved in geopolitics than I. This is geopolitica.ru, geopolitica.ru. And I'll just read you a couple of extracts from this article. It was published on 24th of October of this year. It's by Shaban Syed. And the headline is Rabbi's Speech, a Blueprint for Ukraine War, Depopulation, Enforced Vaccines, Palestinians and Slavs in Reservation Camps. So you can look that up for yourselves, folks. And if we scroll down, because it's a lengthy article. For those who follow the Western media's narrative that war in Ukraine is about evil Putin wanting to pursue expansionist goals, it may come as a surprise that the war in the Ukraine, like the wars in the Middle East, is about establishing a greater Israel, as predicted and planned by the revered Rabbi Schneerson, who died in 1994. The rabbi's hate-filled speech of how to take back Ukraine and destroy Russia stated...
Well, in 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we met up with the British near the town of New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British...
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening live virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile oxysilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Hounds couldn't catch them down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Israel, as predicted and planned by the revered Rabbi Schneerson, who died in 1994. The rabbi's hate-filled speech of how to take back Ukraine and destroy Russia stated, looking back in history, these lands are the ancient ancestral lands of the Jewish Khazaria, that is Israel, captured by Kiev's Rus in the 10th century. The Slavs are temporary guests on these lands, We will return this territory and build the great Khazaria, the Jewish state, on these fertile lands the same way as 50 years ago, we created Israel, squeezing the Palestinians out. Israelis will partially relocate here, and we will drive Slavic cattle out far to the north, beyond Moscow, into Indian-style reservations. So I just thought that was worth bringing up. Any comments, Patrick?
Well, so I have been spending this autumn listening to the a course at Yale that's been put online, and it's a course on Ukrainian history taught by Professor Tim Snyder. And Professor Snyder is somebody who's got I like to research people, and I saw a wedding announcement of his parents back in, you know, the 1960s or whatever, and it's clear that the mother was Christian, the father was Jewish. It was one of those types of things. But this Tim Snyder, he is on the board of directors of some Holocaust museum committee, and it's very, very clear where his identity lies. And his wife is Jewish. And at any rate, he teaches this class at Yale, and of course, a big hunk of the student body also shares that identity. And in this class, you know, it's clear to him, and he's somebody who during the semester actually flew over to Ukraine and had meetings with Zelensky. So he's not just some random academic. He's somebody at the top. He was, you know, he's on some panel with Victoria Nuland. He's somebody at the top of the academia/policymaking apparatus in the United States. And in his class, I think it was the first lecture when he was talking about this on Ukrainian history. And he made a comment. It's very slick the way he makes this comment. And he says the two groups with the longest documented history in Ukraine are Greeks and Jews. Well, documented is a key word here, because to document something, you've got to have a written language. And Slavs didn't have a written language until, 1,300 years ago or something, until they adopted Christianity. They didn't have a written language. The the Greeks were writing about the south shore of the Black Sea. I mean, Jason and the Argonauts, that took place, where Jason got the Golden Fleece, that was in the Ukraine. And Jews have a long they have a long history of literacy. You would never hear somebody like that saying the group with the longest documented history in South Africa are the British and the Dutch, because of course the Bushmen didn't have a written language, neither do the Bantus. Does that give them, you know, what kind of right? It's a very twisted logic. Well, we're coming up towards the end of the show. I don't have a chance to go further with this. Maybe I'll go further into this course later in another show. Do either of you gentlemen have any final thoughts before I wrap up my end of this?
You just wrap up, Patrick, because I know you're right at the end, Mark.
I might mention a couple of news articles for people after Patrick winds it up.
Okay, well, thank you for joining me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle, or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's SusannaS SusanasSecret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.